This is another story from the Zen tradition. It is the story of a man who is trying to cross a flooded river. And he figures out how to get across without drowning. He has built himself a raft, lashed together some old pieces of wood that have been caught in the flood, and a piece of a tree. He finally gets himself to the other side, and as he begins to walk up the hill on the other side, he thinks that this raft has saved his life. It has been immensely useful to him, so he should just bring it with him. So he straps the raft to his back and takes it with him as he climbs the hill up away from the river. It's hard going, carrying a raft up a hillside. But he keeps going because the raft saved his life. And then, as it goes in these stories, a monk comes along that mountain path and asks him, "What are you doing?" And the man explains, "I am carrying this raft because it saved my life." And the monk nods, like they do in these stories, and says, "It's not helping you now." Using the word faith in a UU congregation is a great way to bring out our theological differences, our religious backgrounds, and our spiritual practices in a hurry. Although the word faith has been used more and more recently by UU leaders, it is not a word that I myself use much at all. And I don't use it partially because it is a fairly charged word. And in our communities, I think it's useful to take a step away from those words that inspire immediate reactions from people. There are so many words available that there are lots of ways to talk about what we're trying to do without using the words that make people instantly jumpy. May not make you instantly jumpy, but can almost guarantee that someone who's sitting in your row is a little jumpy about the word faith. So, all of which is to say that I was one of the people who was slightly suspicious when our congregation was invited to participate in the regional Leap of Faith program. And I understood the reaction that some people have had, which is, aren't Unitarian Universalists all about not taking a leap of faith, but about measuring the chasm and then building a bridge across it? However, one of my friends and colleagues who serves our congregation in Des Moines, Iowa, had been through the National Leap of Faith program and had loved it, had loved what it did for his ministry, what it did for their congregation. He said it gave them all kinds of new life and energy, helped them do some of the things they had been trying to do for years, and helped them understand themselves more deeply. So I had some evidence to bolster my leaping. We've talked about the Leap of Faith program, but I'll describe it again for you because we're going to have a visit from our Leap of Faith paired congregation shortly, and I want to make sure we all have some common language about it. So they've paired up congregations across New England this time. When Des Moines was in the program, they were paired with a congregation in New Mexico, I think. So they had a distance to bridge. We're just about an hour and 15 minutes or so from our congregation. But they paired up congregations very thoughtfully. They picked congregations that had something in common and then some differences. The similarities, I think, between all of the paired congregations is that they have a spirit, an energy, something lively and engaging and hopeful. And the difference is that One of the congregations in the pair has been struggling to sort some things out, struggling with questions of growth, both in activities in the congregation and in numbers. As one struggled to sort those things out, the other one has figured some things out about that. So the congregation that's wrestling a little bit is the aspiring congregation. And the one who has done that wrestling in the recent past is the mentoring congregation. We are an aspiring congregation. And as they said at the startup conference, really, who isn't? But we're claiming that title for ourselves. And we got paired with the congregation in Sherborne, Massachusetts. They have maybe 75, maybe 100 more members than we do. They have quite a few more staff members. And I have decided that most importantly, they don't seem to doubt that what they're doing is powerful and important and worthy of their greatest care. But they weren't always like this. In fact, a decade ago, they weren't like this at all. Their minister said, "Well, we had a hard century, and things have started to get better." He hasn't been there the whole time. He's mostly claiming that that decade when things got better. They decided that they had had enough of, well, that century, that they wanted to live differently as a spiritual community and just as people. And they weren't necessarily set on having numbers be in a certain place, in growing numerically in a certain way, but they were interested in making the stretch to open their doors and their hearts to people, to maybe be a little uncomfortable in their own church so that they would always be welcoming new people and new perspectives in, so that everyone could have the gifts of spiritual community that they had. They decided to do the spiritual work to engage everyone they could in conversation about the big questions of life by setting up small groups of all kinds and setting high standards for how people participate in those groups and in everything. They are visiting us. It sounds like the whole congregation's coming. A team of them is coming in 2 weeks to talk with us about what they learned on their journey as they engage this new way of being. And they're going to spend the whole weekend with us, so they're going to tell us what they see in who we are and how we go about our version of an engaged community. So we also get to do the spiritual work of being in relationship with another congregation, even when we don't know exactly what will come of it. And I think that's why they named the program Leap of Faith, to get us doing that spiritual work, that intangible work that is necessary. Necessary if we are going to go on the X Factor with our amazing voice or put down the raft that was so essential at another moment, but isn't as essential now. The spiritual work is hard to see, hard to know when it's happening, but it's profound, which is why it's hard to get our hands around what the work is exactly, hard to find language that fits it. Mostly how we talk about the spiritual work and about the changes in community life are by telling stories about what we have faith in, what we rely on in hard times. And I was thinking about this process of telling stories about our congregation, stories about our own lives. And one of my mentors said to me, well, you know, there are really only four kinds of stories. Some of you may know that there are actually several versions of that statement, that there are really only three kinds of stories, there are really only two kinds of stories. This is the claim that there are four kinds of stories. And the first kind of story in this model is the empirical story. It's the story of facts and truth, the measurable things, the way you figure out how deep the chasm is and the way you engineer the bridge across it. And in this story, in the empirical story, there is no beyond to leap into. If there is a faith in this story, it is the faith that we can do what needs to be done without the transcendent. And the world that we live in and function in day to day is this story. The humanist tradition in Unitarian Universalism tells this story. It relies on the miracle that we ourselves can make things happen in the world. In the four stories model, the second story, kind of story that gets told is the tragic story. The name, of course, describes it, but it means that we are under forces that are larger than our ability to control them. It's a story in which we have to bend, submit. There is some sense that we are diminished by the forces that are beyond us. As a tradition, Unitarian Universalists tend to avoid this narrative. We are about onward and upward. We tend to emphasize the active side of our Judeo-Christian heritage. But you, in your life, may be telling some of this story. This may be part of your story. Buddhism sometimes tells this story, that peace is found by giving up striving. This is a story of having faith in something beyond ourselves, but it's a giving in and a losing to that larger force. We struggle with these stories. We don't want them in our lives, and sometimes they are here with us. You can imagine if the empirical story and the tragic story are sitting next to each other, they might not always understand each other. The third story I think feels most native to us in a spiritual community is the story of the journey. The story of going through great difficulties to get to the promised land. It is the story of Moses. It is the story of Jesus. It is probably our most common religious story in our culture. It is a story of striving and overcoming, and we love a story of overcoming. The faith here is that there is a promised land, even if we don't get there. The story of Christopher Maloney, of course, is that story. Christopher Maloney seems to call that something that we believe in this journey story, his grandmother, because she believes in him when everyone else seems to doubt him. But in the story of his life, she is the conduit for that love that is larger than everything, that drives the story of the journey. And that leads us to the fourth kind of story that we tell, which is the story of union. This is the story that everything is one. We are all connected. And this story is under the teachings of Buddhism and the teachings of Jesus. This is the story of the pagan traditions. and of many native people's ways. If you are going to leap into this story, it is the leap into the embrace of the whole of life. This is the interconnected web of all existence. But it's not a story that can be measured and quantified very well. It's an experience of that oneness. So if the story of union sits down next to the tragic story or the empirical story, they may have trouble understanding each other's stories. So I think the Leap of Faith program is designed also to help us tell the story of who we are as a congregation and to help us find all of the versions of the stories that we tell and then help us tell a bigger story. Because what we have found as we go out and are participating in these Leap of Faith meetings is that when we tell the story of our congregation, the people who hear it say, "Wow," in a way that we forget to. Almost every congregation tends to tell their story in a way that's maybe not as big as it actually is. And we tend to get stuck hauling around old stories that don't serve us anymore. It is one of the things that human beings do. And I would like congregational life to be a place where we get to practice that intangible, unquantifiable work of figuring out different stories for ourselves. We start by working it out as a congregation, as part of this leaping program, and then the possibilities of that leaks into our lives. So I have come to understand that being part of the Leap of Faith program means that we are doing intangible work and explicit work at the same time, which means when our mentoring congregation arrives here, we're going to ask them some very specific questions about how they do certain things. What do you do about membership? And how do you do your budget? Those very obvious things. And at the same time, there will be this other work happening. I think the program is an invitation to trust that invisible, intangible shifting and turning that is part of spiritual work. What I'm talking about is that sensation in the mind. When you hear the story of the man with the raft being told by the monk that the raft isn't helping him now, that little shift that happens in your awareness, that's the work of Leap of Faith. It's helping each of the congregations and each of the members of the congregations notice that slight surprise when we encounter a shift in the world. Notice the way our mind can change. Notice where there can be new things entering that are so subtle we could go by and miss them. We live in a world of quantification and calculation. And it turns out that that's a pretty good story. I got flu shots for my baby and myself this year. I like the quantification and calculation that went into making that happen. From creating vaccines to getting the dose just right. And in church life, in spiritual life, we're working on a different project. We are here to work on the stories that we tell about our lives. We are here to grapple with the intangible We don't always have the skills we need to do that because we live in a world that tells another kind of story. But we are here to work with those more subtle forces, to acknowledge the things that make us tell a tragic story, the forces that allow us to suddenly feel the deep connection of everything. Taking a leap means being willing to not know what is next, to let go of a plan and control. Not always, but sometimes, to learn when to do that and how. To learn to watch for those subtle turnings of the mind. Taking a leap of faith means diving inward and learning that you can stand your own inner life, and that while it's noisy and crowded and sometimes weird and boring in there, there is beauty beyond measure as well. Taking a leap of faith means being vulnerable before your fellow humans and the universe. It's terrifying to step out in front of who knows how many people and one of our great leaders for justice, Martin Luther King, said, "The leap of faith is taking the first step without being able to see the whole staircase."